Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, May 13, 2021. Coming up this hour,
the largest U.S. gasoline pipeline returns to service.
The White House pushes for an end to clashes between Israel and Gaza.
Traders await another key inflation report after yesterday's surprise print.
And Bitcoin slides after Tesla suspends purchases using the digital currency.
The suspect in last weekend's shooting in Times Square has been arrested. Plus, former Minneapolis police officer Chauvin faces a tougher prison sentence. I'm Michael Vaughn. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Nets beat the Spurs. The Yankees shut out the Rays, and the Mets won their seventh in a row.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Withum, a forward-thinking advisory and accounting firm offering industry expertise and innovative solutions for your business. Experience the Withum way. Innovative, adaptive, effective, trusted. Visit Withum.com for more.
And U.S. futures are falling this morning, adding to yesterday's losses. 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 14 points. Dow futures down 184. NASDAQ futures down 38. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 1.70%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.16%. Nathan.
And Karen, oil and gas are adding to their declines this morning as well, following news that the largest U.S. gasoline pipeline is returning to service. Let's get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Colonial Pipeline resumed fuel shipments around 5 p.m. Eastern time. It's recovering from a cyber attack that happened about a week ago, triggering shortages across the East Coast. In a further effort to provide relief, the Biden administration temporarily waived century-old shipping restrictions to allow foreign tankers to transport fuel to areas with shortages. Now, it's unclear how long it'll take for supplies to come back to normal, but it could take up to a week for foreign flags tankers to fill the supply gap. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Renita, thank you. Another major story we're following is the escalating violence in the Middle East. In just 3 days, fighting between Israel and the Palestinians has already begun to resemble or exceed a devastating 50-day war in 2014. President Biden spoke to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about the conflict.
Israel has a right to defend itself when you have thousands of rockets flying into your territory. But I had a conversation for a while with the Prime Minister of Israel, and my hope is that we'll see this coming to conclusion sooner than later.
And so far, more than 60 Palestinians have been reported killed in Gaza and at least 6 dead in Israel.
When it comes to domestic policy, President Biden and Republican leaders are talking infrastructure spending. The two sides see a narrow path toward compromise, but there's one big sticking point. Amy Morris has more from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Republicans want a limited definition of infrastructure and will not budge over tax increases to pay for it. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy.
Let's first decide, what is the definition of infrastructure? If we can all decide that, then we can work on what the need is and what we need to spend.
He and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell will not revisit the Trump-era 2017 tax cuts, ruling out the Biden proposal to raise the corporate rate from 21%. But McCarthy also called talks with President Biden, quote, very strong, and says there is a place for bipartisanship. The timing is crucial. The White House has said it wants to see Congress move legislation by Memorial Day. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Amy, thank you. We now turn to the latest on the pandemic. The CDC is opening a new phase in the U.S. immunization effort, saying children 12 to 15 can safely take the coronavirus vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech. President Biden said it's imperative for all Americans to get vaccinated.
We're now on track to hit 60% of adults with at least one shot by next week. We still have a lot of work to do to get the adult vaccination rate to 70%. But I believe we're going to get there.
Well, getting a shot could make you a millionaire. In an effort to boost vaccine numbers, Ohio is giving $1 million cash prizes to 5 randomly selected residents who get their shot by May 26th. So far, 42% of the state of Ohio has been vaccinated.
Turning to the economy now, Wall Street is bracing for another round of inflation data with today's producer price index for April. Let's get more from Bloomberg Economics correspondent Michael McKee.
The big jump in consumer prices has markets on inflation watch, although producer prices don't often feed directly into the inflation pipeline. We know prices are climbing due to supply chain disruptions, particularly for commodities. One thing to watch, the difference between PPI for intermediate goods, those used to make others, and final goods. Are companies absorbing higher costs or passing them along? Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Mike, thank you. An economist predicted today's producer price index will show a 0.3% increase for April. Bloomberg customers can get more on the estimates at EcoGo on the terminal.
The PPI report comes a day after consumer prices climbed by the most in nearly 12 years. The Federal Reserve is watching inflation closely, but Vice Chair Richard Clarida is playing down the significance, once again calling it transitory.
Readings on inflation on a year-over-year basis have recently increased and are likely to rise somewhat further before moderating later this year. Under my baseline, I expect inflation to return to, or perhaps run somewhat above, our 2% longer run goal in 2022 and 2023.
Vice Chair Clarida made the comments yesterday before the National Association of Business Economics.
And we're seeing Bitcoin drop this morning. That's after Tesla suspended vehicle purchases using the cryptocurrency. We get more from Bloomberg's Doug Krisner.
CEO Elon Musk said Tesla is concerned about rapidly increasing use of fossil fuels for energy and Bitcoin mining. That's especially true where coal is concerned. Musk said cryptocurrency is a good idea on many levels, and Tesla believes it has a promising future, but it cannot come at great cost to the environment. Musk said Tesla will not be selling any Bitcoin. The company intends to use it for transactions as soon as mining transitions to more sustainable energy. Tesla is looking at other cryptos that use less than 1% of Bitcoin's energy per transaction. I'm Doug Krisner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Doug, thank you. And checking Bitcoin now, it's down more than 8.5%. It's at $49,784. Futures also lower this morning. S&P futures down 21 points. Dow futures down 243. And NASDAQ futures down 58. NYMEX crude oil down 2.7%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
6:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. An NYPD officer was shot 3 times while on duty last night. It happened when the 28-year-old officer was approaching a man with a gun minutes after a nearby fatal shooting and crash in Brooklyn. The officer is expected to recover. The suspect was shot in the leg. Police say the man who opened fire in Times Square last weekend, wounding bystanders, has been arrested. Authorities say Farrakhan Muhammad was arrested by federal marshals at a McDonald's in Stark, Florida, near Jacksonville. NYPD Chief of Detectives James Essig credits investigative work and Crime Stoppers tips.
Thousands of hours of video canvassing to be viewed, witnesses to be interviewed. The eyes of the world were on them. They were watching. And here we are, 4 days later, with an apprehension.
Essex says the suspect's brother was the intended target when Muhammad allegedly opened fire on the street, injuring 2 women and a 4-year-old girl. An arrest has been made after an Asian woman was attacked in the head with a hammer earlier this month near Times Square. The NYPD says a 37-year-old homeless woman, Ebony Jackson, was arrested on charges including assault and criminal possession of a weapon. Authorities say the victim did not know her assailant. The Democratic candidates in New York City's mayoral race will debate tonight. It's the first of 3 official primary debates. The primary is June 22nd. The House Homeland Security Committee is taking a closer look at the January 6th siege on the Capitol. Ranking member John Katko of New York wants to know how things escalated so quickly.
92% of the Capitol police officers do not have faith in the leadership of the Capitol Hill Police. And there's a lot of security failures that happened that day that allowed this to happen.
Congressman Katko spoke to ABC. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin could receive a prison sentence longer than recommended by state guidelines for the killing of George Floyd. The judge in the trial cited facts supporting an aggravated durational departure from the guidelines, clearing the way for him to exceed them. Attorney General Merrick Garland told senators that the horror of domestic violent extremism is still with us.
In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat we face comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists specifically those who advocate for the superiority of the white race.
Garland says domestic violent extremists pose an elevated threat in 2021. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. Just about 6:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. Garrett Cole continues to be money well spent. Last night at Tampa Bay may have been his best Yankee outing. 8 innings, no runs, 4 hits, 12 strikeouts, no walks. Cole has not walked a batter in a month. Yanks got a run in the 7th inning. They won 1-0 over the Rays. They've won 9 of the last 11. Red Sox lost. The Yanks are only one game behind. Meanwhile, the Yanks dealing with a COVID outbreak. Only one player has been affected, and Gleyber Torres didn't play last night only as a precaution, but 3 coaches and 4 staff members have tested positive, even though they were fully vaccinated. Aaron Boone is a manager, not a doctor.
In some of these cases, it's probably been, you know, a false positive along the way, or maybe somebody with antibodies, a certain shedding that goes on that can show up in a given test. Again, a little above my pay grade, and I don't quite understand it all that well.
Aaron Boone, Mets won their 7th in a row, 7-1 over Baltimore. They got to their old friend Matt Harvey, making his first start at Citi Field since he left the Mets 3 years ago. Dom Smith had 3 hits, and Taiwan Walker continues to pitch well, allowed only 4 hits in 7 innings. In Brooklyn, welcome back James Harden. His first game since early April helped the Nets beat San Antonio 128-116. The Spurs visit the Knicks tonight. The Rangers have fired coach David Quinn after 3 years on the job. The big news out of the release of the NFL schedule, Tom Brady will face his old team October 3rd, Tampa Bay at New England. But in week 1, it's Sam Darnold facing his old team as the Jets visit Carolina. The Giants season opener will be at home against Denver. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. S&P futures now down 19 points. Dow futures down 227. NASDAQ futures down 53 points. Bitcoin down more than 8.5% below $50,000. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, partly to mostly sunny, upper 60s. Today we'll get into the low 70s tomorrow and Saturday with a mix of sunshine and clouds. 52 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks are falling to a 6-week low, and U.S. stock index futures are retreating as inflation fears continue to depress investor sentiment. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 15 points, Dow futures down 199, NASDAQ futures down 34, the DAX in Germany is down 1.4%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 1.69%, the yield on the 2-year 0.16%. NYMEX crude oil is falling, down 2.7% on $1.80 at $64.28 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.7% or $11.80 at $18.10.90 an ounce. The euro 1.2064 against the dollar, British pound 1.4015, the yen at 109.62, and Bitcoin down about 8% at $50,132. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. Colonial Pipeline says its system is back online and it has begun the process of getting things back up and running. The developments come nearly a week after a ransomware attack. With half of the East Coast's fuel supply knocked offline, gas prices have been soaring. President Joe Biden spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu amid a surge of Israeli-Palestinian violence. Biden says Israel has the right to defend itself from attacks. More than 60 Palestinians have been reported killed in Gaza and at least 6 people in Israel. In Major League Baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets downed the Orioles 7-1. The A's beat the Red Sox 4-1. The Nationals lost. In the NBA, the Nets won. The Wizards lost. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Turning
turning now to the pandemic, kids as young as 12 can start lining up for shots today. Now that the CDC has signed off on the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for adolescents. Dr. Jennifer Nuzzo is with us this morning, lead epidemiologist at the Johns Hopkins COVID-19 Testing Insights Initiative. Dr. Nuzzo, good morning. So should parents be expecting long lines today?
Well, I think it probably depends on where you live, but I know based on parents, friends of mine who have teenagers, everybody's very, very eager to get their kids vaccinated. So it may take a while, but the good news is that the vaccines are going to be available immediately. So now's the time to start looking for appointments.
So you don't expect the same kind of hiccups in distribution that we saw early in the pandemic when all us adults tried to get appointments and pre-register for appointments and all that?
No, it should be much easier because there are just many more doses available now as compared to the beginning. And also there's a greater infrastructure that's been built with more providers offering vaccines now. And because adult vaccinations is unfortunately lagging a bit, it should be easier to get an appointment now.
I want to get to that lag in just a minute, but first I want to ask you what dent you think vaccinating teens will make in our pandemic. Older populations are more at risk from moderate to severe disease from COVID-19, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't expect it's going to have a huge dent. I mean, I know some people are looking at it in the context of, you know, chasing that elusive goal of herd immunity. Teens, you know, they're at a little bit higher risk than kids, but kids in general have been largely spared the worst consequences of this virus. I know parents, though, maybe want an extra peace of mind. But really, the most effective vaccination strategy for bringing down cases is to vaccinate the working population. So, you know, adults, basically.
Right.
We've seen other countries only vaccinate adults, like Israel, and they brought their case rate way down across all age groups. So vaccinating adults protects kids. But, you know, I understand that parents probably just want an extra peace of mind, and they're probably very eager to have their kids get back to their activities. And while a vaccine isn't strictly necessary for that, we know it just might be easier.
Well, as you alluded to, vaccinating adults has become a bit more of a challenge now. We've seen that trend line of average daily shots administered on this sort of steady decline over the last few weeks here. What do you think it's going to take to get the rollout back up to speed and get to that that goal that we've heard from the president so many times that he wants to see 70% of American adults vaccinated by early July?
It's going to take efforts in a few different areas. I mean, first of all, there are still people who very much want the vaccine who haven't been able to get it, homebound seniors, for instance. So states are going to have to look into, you know, visiting nurse services and basically taking vaccines to people who may not have been able to get themselves to an appointment. But then in terms of that kind of group that we're concerned about, the people who have been on the fence, some of them may have been on the fence just because they haven't had the time or the energy to track down a vaccine appointment. And it's about reminding them that there are now more options and just making it easier for people to do it. And then in terms of the people who are possibly opposed or nervous, I mean, that's going to take education and engagement and continual conversation. But hopefully as more of us get vaccinated and sort of loudly talk about the freedoms that come with getting vaccinated and how much of a relief it is, that will help encourage perhaps some of our more hesitant friends and loved ones.
I want to get your reaction to some of the incentives we're hearing about that some states and cities are putting out there. One of the latest is Ohio's governor offering random $1 million checks to people who get vaccines. I don't want to ask a leading question here, but does that kind of smack of desperation?
Well, I think they're trying to get creative. And the fact is, you know, we know some people are going to need a nudge. $1 million check is a bit more than a nudge, but some people are going to need some encouragement, we'll say, or incentive to get vaccinated. You know, at this point, I am all for whatever it takes. I mean, if we zoom out a little bit and think about the rest of the world and how people are desperate for vaccines, it is quite sad. But you know, I think there is some value, at least in the U.S., for making a little bit more fun of the act of getting vaccinated and not perhaps making it seem like this, you know, government conspiracy that some people think that it is. And if we can do that by offering beer or pizza or whatever it is that states are offering, then I'm all for it. Whatever it takes to get vaccines in arms, to get us back to normal, because that's really the gift of vaccines.
Yeah. creative is an understatement. Thank you, Dr. Nuzzo. Great, as always, having you on with us. Dr. Jennifer Nuzzo is lead epidemiologist at the Johns Hopkins COVID-19 Testing Insights Initiative. So far, 265 million vaccine doses have been given in this country. You can follow the effort on the Bloomberg Vaccine Tracker at Bloomberg.com. And Bloomberg Terminal customers can get all the latest global news on the coronavirus outbreak. VRUS Go is the Bloomberg Terminal function to access all that. S&P futures down almost 17 points. Dow futures down 212. NASDAQ futures down 44. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, partly to mostly sunny, upper 60s today, low 70s, mix of sun and clouds tomorrow and Saturday. Currently 52 degrees in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 11:30 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 106.1 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Six 30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Oil and gas prices are easing as the largest U.S. gasoline pipeline returns to service. We get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. Colonial Pipeline resumed fuel shipments around 5 p.m. Eastern time. It's recovering from a cyber attack that happened about a week ago, triggering shortages across the East Coast. In a further effort to provide relief, the Biden administration temporarily waived century-old shipping restrictions so foreign tankers could transport fuel to areas with shortages. Now, it's unclear how long it'll take for supplies to come back to normal, but it could take up to a week for foreign flagged tankers to fill the supply gap. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thanks. Meantime, in the Middle East, clashes continue between Israel and Gaza. President Biden has started a diplomatic push to end the violence.
I had a conversation for a while with the Prime Minister of Israel, and my hope is that we'll see this coming to conclusion sooner than later.
So far, more than 60 Palestinians have been reported killed in Gaza, along with at least 6 people in Israel.
Turning to the U.S. economy now, inflation is in focus once again. We get the producer price index for April this morning. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice has more.
The U.S. economy is reopening after the pandemic, and today's report will reveal the impact of rising commodity costs, including record lumber prices. Investors are on edge after the government reported April's consumer price index posted the largest increase in 12 years on broad-based gains. Bloomberg Economics points to snarls in the supply chain. Vinnie Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. Economists predict today's producer price index will show a 0.3% gain for April. Bloomberg customers can get more on the estimates at EcoGo on the terminal.
Bitcoin is down more than 9% this morning. That's after Elon Musk said Tesla's suspending car purchases using the cryptocurrency. He cited concerns about increasing use of fossil fuels for mining Bitcoin. We get more from Bloomberg's Eric Lamb.
There's a lot of questions from the industry over the timing of this and certainly the rationale. The concerns about the environmental issues with Bitcoin, they're not new. They've been around for a long time. So there's not really a clear indicator of why Musk decided today was the time to suspend acceptance of payments.
Bloomberg's Eric Lamb says Tesla might consider accepting other cryptocurrencies that are less energy intensive.
And this headline, Genworth Financial has postponed its planned IPO of Enact Holdings. That just crossing the Bloomberg futures lower. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
6:33 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here with us once again for a look at what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. An NYPD officer was shot 3 times after approaching a gun-wielding man minutes after a nearby fatal shooting and crash in Brooklyn last night. The 28-year-old officer was struck in the rear of his bulletproof vest as well as in his leg. The injured officer fired 9 shots in return, and another officer fired a dozen rounds, striking the 26-year-old suspect in the leg. Mayor Bill de Blasio hailed the officer.
This is the kind of thing that we see that gives us a clear example of how much bravery, how much courage, how much devotion it takes to be out there in the middle of the night on a street protecting everybody else.
Mayor de Blasio says the officer was rushed to Kings County Hospital in stable condition. The man suspected of shooting three people, including a young girl in Times Square last weekend, was arrested in Florida. NYPD Chief of Detectives James Essick credits investigative work and Crime Stoppers tips.
Members of the United States Marshal's Office apprehended Farrakhan Muhammad in a McDonald's parking lot in Stark, Florida, just outside of Jacksonville.
Essex says Muhammad was trying to shoot his brother after an argument and instead shot three bystanders, including a four-year-old girl. The union representing thousands of Connecticut nursing home workers poised to strike is expressing hope that contract agreements can be made before their members walk off the job tomorrow. The union says Governor Ned Lamont and the General Assembly need to find more money to address the long-standing problem of low wages in these long-term care facilities. Meanwhile, Lamont's office said earlier that he has made his last best offer to the union and management. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin potentially faces a much tougher prison sentence. The judge in Chauvin's trial ruled there were aggravating factors present when George Floyd was murdered. The ruling will now allow Judge Peter Cahill to impose up to a 40-year sentence. Attorney General Merrick Garland told senators domestic violent extremists pose an elevated threat.
Unfortunately, the horror of domestic violent extremism is still with us. Indeed, the FBI assessed that 2019 was the deadliest year for violent domestic extremism since 1995.
Garland referenced the report drafted by the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and the National Counterterrorism Center. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. 6:36 on Wall Street, John Stashower has the Bloomberg Sports Update.
Thanks, Nathan. The Yankee bats are still quiet, but thanks to the pitching, the Yanks won 1-0 at Tampa Bay, have now won 9 of the last 11. They're only a game out of first place. Last night it was the ace, Garrett Cole. 8 scoreless innings, he allowed only 4 hits, struck out 12, and for the 5th consecutive start, Cole did not walk a batter. He's 5-1, his ERA is 1.37. Aroldis Chapman got the save. He remains perfect in relief. Gleyber Torres did not play due to a COVID precaution. 3 Yankee coaches and 4 staff members have tested positive despite being fully vaccinated. 7th straight win for the Mets. This one was easy. 7-1 over Baltimore as Taijuan Walker beat the ex-Met Matt Harvey. Night after, the Nets had 8 players in double figures. They had 7 score at least 10 points. A 128-116 win in Brooklyn over San Antonio. And among the 7, James Harden in his return from the hamstring injury. Harden played 28 minutes off the bench, had 18 points, 11 assists. Kyrie Irving did not play, so the big 3 of Harden, Irving, and Kevin Durant still have only played together 7 times. With the Rangers having shaken up the front office by firing team president John Davidson and general manager Jeff Gorton, not a surprise, coach David Quinn was fired after 3 years on the job. The Jets traded Sam Darnold to the Panthers. Sure enough, they will open the season at Carolina. The Giants in week 1 host Denver in November. The Giants have Monday night road games against the last 2 Super Bowl champs, Tampa Bay and Kansas City. Tom Brady's return to New England will be in primetime on October 3rd. And Tampa Bay is playing the first game of the season at home against Dallas. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. 6:37 on Wall Street. Time to take a look at stocks and some of the names moving in the pre-market with Bloomberg Stocks reporter Kriti Gupta. Another risk-off morning, Kriti.
It absolutely is. And your immediate reaction is that it's probably going to be tech, right? They're the ones dragging down the market. That's been the story for the past 3 days. Why not add a 4th? And I mean, to some extent, that is true. Let's just look under the hood here. Apple shares, for example, down 0.5%, ticker AAPL. Then you got even the semiconductors not doing so well. They were down 4.2% in yesterday's session. Today, you have Advanced Micro Devices, ticker AMD, down 0.5% in the pre-market. Lam Research taking a heavy hit, though, down 1%. And of course, heavy volume seen in Qualcomm. That's a lot of that has to do with kind of the Apple story about changing their own kind of chip making process, ticker QCOM, down 0.7%. So like I said, the assumption here is that it is going to be tech stocks, but it's actually the worst performers in the pre-market right now are going to be your energy names. And who thought that They were actually one of the outperformers yesterday. So energy names here, let's just go through them here. Marathon Petroleum, ticker MRO, down 3.5%. That's just in the pre-market. A lot of this has to do with oil prices. You're going to see that as well in companies like Phillips 66, down 3%. Even Exxon, ticker XOM, down 2.3%. So on the one side, you have energy. On the other side, you have tech. Both not really doing that great.
Yeah, like you say, they're on the extreme ends of the risk spectrum, right? Energy and tech. But what's happening with sectors in the middle of risk?
Yeah, well, let's just start off with industrials, because I think that's such a cyclical area we've been paying attention to. And of course, right when we think industrials, airlines are the ones that are the most volatile names. So let's just look at American Airlines here, down 1.6%, ticker AAL. Really interesting, though, to see that you're starting to see those cyclical names, those easy volatility plays, take a little bit of a hit. And of course, some of that's going to come off the kind of correlations that you see with the oil market as well. Another example of that's going to be Delta Airlines, ticker DAL, down 1.7%. But Nathan, I also want to bring to your attention what's going on in the consumer discretionary sector, because we do actually see some green in there. Gap, for example, ticker GPS, announcing a second quarter dividend and resumption of share purchases. The share is up 2.4% in the pre-market. So I guess what you need to do well in this selling storm is to just, you know, announce buybacks. And then lastly, I do want to bring to your attention this. This is a pretty interesting story, actually. MGM Resorts, ticker MGM. The resorts are returning to full gaming floor occupancy in Vegas with no social distancing. 100% people are coming back. That's actually weighing on the shares this morning. Huh. Shares down 4.4% in the pre-market.
Yeah, so a little bit of risk tied to the pandemic perhaps still in this market. All right, Bloomberg Stocks reporter Kriti Gupta, thank you as always for all this. And as we take a look at stocks as a whole ahead of the open on this Thursday morning, once again, red across the board, with S&P futures down 14 points, Dow futures down 188, NASDAQ futures not leading the declines this morning. They're down 32 points. Little change to the 10-year Treasury. It's down 1/32nd. The yield 1.70%. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, partly to mostly sunny, upper 60s today. We'll get into the low 70s under a mix of sun clouds tomorrow. Saturday, sunshine, some afternoon clouds, low 70s. 52 is our current temperature.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are falling this morning along with NYMEX crude oil. We go to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are under pressure again today, with Dow futures down 186 points, S&P's dropped 14, NASDAQ futures lower by 34. The U.S. 10-year yield hits 1.7%, gold is down 2%, and Japan fell 2.5% overnight. While European markets are also under pressure this morning. Back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30, U.S. April producer price index, as well as initial jobs claims. And after the bell last night, Sonos reported is up 13% in the pre-market, and Bumble gave a cautious outlook. Regarding earnings, look for Alibaba to report in the pre-market. And in other news, Bitcoin plunged as much as 15% overnight, as Elon Musk said Tesla won't accept Bitcoin payments. Wrapping things up, Deere cut to market reform at BMO. Array Technologies raised outperform at Credit Suisse. And Lowe's was raised outperform over at Oppenheimer. Live from the First of Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
Bill, thank you. To hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you, Karen. Colonial Pipeline says it initiated the restart of operations, but it will take several days for fuel deliveries to return to normal. The company was hit by a ransomware attack last Friday, snarling gas supplies in the east. A spokesman for the UN Secretary General says Antonio Guterres was saddened by the fighting between Israel and the Palestinians. Meanwhile, President Biden says he has spoken with Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu. In Major League Baseball, the Yankees beat Tampa Bay 1-0. That's the good news. The bad news, the number of confirmed positive COVID-19 tests among the Yankees coaching and support staff reached 7. The Mets downed the Orioles 7-1. The A's beat the Red Sox 4-1. The Nationals lost. In the NBA, the Nets won. The Wizards lost. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Governing. I'm Jonathan Bernstein, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. How about some competence? We've just been through a presidency which often seemed to have destroying the government of the United States as a goal. Before that, neither Barack Obama nor George W. Bush seemed particularly interested in executive branch management or showed much skill in doing it. Congress used to take its oversight responsibilities seriously. Oversight was a way for members of Congress to generate positive publicity for themselves and to personally and institutionally compete for control of the federal bureaucracy. That mostly changed in 1995. Newt Gingrich's supposed revolution and the radicalism that it infused congressional Republicans with were about destroying things, not reforming or even controlling them. And it was about partisanship, not governing. Since then, Republicans have taken oversight responsibilities even less seriously, and Democrats, too, have moved in that direction. Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer have a lot on their plates. Still, I'd sure like to see some sign that they are aware of the importance of making even obscure agencies work well. I'm Jonathan Bernstein. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's coming up to 6:51 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include President Biden signing a cybersecurity order and lifting ship mandates to deal with the Colonial Pipeline shutdown. The Israel-Gaza crisis dragging the president into a vortex he had tried to avoid, and optimism on an infrastructure deal tempered over a tax divide between the president and Republicans. Also making news this morning, former President Donald Trump's plans to play kingmaker in next year's midterms could pose a threat for Republicans. For more, we're joined by Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins. Of course, Emily, we know the GOP has been in an intra-party fight over former President Trump's role. How much of a role is he planning to play in next year's elections?
Nathan, that's a huge question right now that really remains to be seen. You've seen congressional leaders like House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy go down to Mar-a-Lago, speak with Trump, and then come back and say Trump has promised to help us in 2022. You've already seen Trump make some early endorsements in several races, such as Texas's special election in Texas's 6th district. But at this point, you know, most individuals haven't announced they're running for Congress yet. We don't even know what districts look like at this point because of U.S. delays in U.S. Census Bureau data holding back the redistricting process. So at this point, it's still going to be a big question exactly how much of a role that Trump plays, but lawmakers are definitely looking to him and talking with him about what role he will play, because they understand that they need to turn out Trump's voters and Trump supporters. Easiest way to do that is through former President Trump.
And I guess it also remains to be seen what kind of role President Trump will play in general election contests. I mean, an endorsement from the president is great for primaries, but for generals, that could be a different scenario.
Yeah, there was a study that was done that showed that of the 120 Trump-endorsed candidates, all but two Republican, all but two won their primary in 2022. And these are, of course, Republican primaries, and primaries tend to be, races that tend to turn out a party's base. But then in the general election, he endorsed about 183 candidates, but 40 of them wound up losing, and all of them ran in competitive districts. And so it showed that for the general election, when a Republican is going against a Democrat, Trump's endorsement holds less power, in part, the study said, because Democrats, Trump might mobilize Republicans, but he also mobilizes Democrats who don't like him and his supporters to come out and vote against those candidates.
All right, let's turn to some of today's priorities for President Biden. I know he's going to be addressing the Colonial Pipeline shutdown, making some remarks on that today. But we already know as well that he's taken some concrete steps to try to deal with the crisis.
So President Biden did sign an executive order dealing with cybersecurity. It calls for new standards for the security of software supply, just making sure that there's, you know, extra layers of security there, both internally and with dealing with contractors. This executive order was actually in the works for a while, Nathan. It preceded what happened with the Colonial Pipeline. But sort of speaks to the fact that the U.S. does have some ways to go in protecting its infrastructure, public and private, from hacks like this one and from the subsequent fallout that we've really seen from Colonial Pipeline being shut down for only a few days, leading to rising gas prices, gas shortages, and just a little bit of panic. I mean, you and I have both seen the photos of cars lined up to get gas at gas stations.
Yeah. Well, one issue we know, or I think it's safe to say the president didn't want to deal with, is a conflict in the Middle East. But we do have this escalating violence between Israel and Hamas. How is the president responding to that?
So President Biden did speak with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Wednesday. Biden told reporters at the White House that his expectation is that this will be closing down sooner than later, but defended Israel as having a right to defend themselves. He sort of talked about his hope that there would be peace returning to the region. And during his call with Netanyahu, Biden conveyed his unwavering support for Israel's security, according to the White House.
Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins, thank you as always. Read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg terminal. And as always, you can follow the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Karen?
Nathan, at 6:55 on Wall Street, it's time for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report, brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology. NJIT annually connects more than 1,700 tech-savvy students with the world's top industry employers through co-ops and internships. Learn more at njit.edu/CDS. Now, here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. The CDC has opened up a new phase in the U.S. immunization effort. An agency advisory committee says that children 12 to 15 can safely take the coronavirus vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech. The FDA cleared the vaccine's use on adolescents earlier this week. Tesla is suspending electric car purchases using the digital currency. CEO Elon Musk cited concerns about the amount of fossil fuels needed for Bitcoin mining and transactions. Tesla signaled it might accept other cryptocurrencies if they are much less energy intensive. The process of building the NFL schedule used to be a painstaking one, with executives spending months slotting the games one by one until there was a final product for the commissioner to approve. Making late tweaks with a big game moving from early to late in the season weren't really possible for all the pieces of a complicated jigsaw puzzle to fit. The 272-game schedule the NFL released yesterday took a completely different journey to completion. Computers from Amazon Web Services negotiated the trillions of possibilities on what day, what time, and what network to play each game. Officials at the league were then able to look at more than 80,000 of them before making a final choice. And that's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. Futures this morning moving lower. S&P futures down 11 points. Dow futures down 152. And NASDAQ futures down 29. 10-year Treasury little change. Yield 1.69%. And the yield on the 2-year 0.16%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 2.6% at $64.34 a barrel. Bloomberg Surveillance with Tom Keen, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz is straight ahead. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.